Welcome back to WDOT Port Washington. I'm your host, Jake Wilbur, and today we're joined by a professional baseball pitcher for the TSG Hawks of the Chinese Professional Baseball League, Nick Margavichus. Nick, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, no problem.
Before we get started here, if you wouldn't mind telling the listeners at home a little bit about yourself.
So, I'm born and raised in Cleveland, Ohio. To St. Ignatius High School in Cleveland, and that's where I got recognized to play, that I wanted to play further in my baseball career, and then I continued on to school at Rider University, where I played baseball, majored in finance and sports management, and then after my third year, I was taken in the seventh round of the Major League Player Draft in 2017. And then I made my debut with the San Diego Padres in 2019. Played with the Mariners in 2020, got hurt in 2021. Came back in 2022, was with the Braves in 2023. And then now I'm in Taiwan for 2024. So it's kind of crazy going through that right now, just kind of running down in my head. But there's been a lot of stops for me so far.
That's great. Transitioning from your introduction, let's dive into your journey. What sparked your passion and love for the game of baseball?
I think just playing from a young kid. I played every sport. I played with my friends, my family, anybody who would play with me. I would play whatever they wanted, and baseball just took hold. I'm not sure if it was because there's anything about the game, or if it's just what I was best at from a young age, and I just always loved it for as long as I can remember.
That's great. Conditioning to our next question, what was playing high school baseball like for you, and how did you get noticed by college coaches?
Well, high school baseball was kind of interesting for me because I was a really out of shape kid. If you looked at me, you would not think that this guy is an athlete. Definitely not this guy is going to go play professional baseball. One of the downfalls for me in high school was my conditioning, and I was like last in a lot of the conditioning tests. I almost got cut my sophomore year because I was so slow and I was so out of shape in the running. So that was a hurdle for me to overcome, and I did it because I pitched so well and I played really good. So the coaches, they kind of had to keep me around, and then my junior year, I ended up pitching the state championship. We lost to this team called Moeller, who I've actually played a lot of their guys in professional ball since then again. And, how did I get noticed? So we were kind of at the front of all this, like, sending stuff out and data and all that. So when I was in high school, that didn't really exist. It was kind of like the coach came to see you, or someone told the coach, and that's how you got noticed or whatever. But what we did was we created a video and we had an email thread chain of every Division I college coach. And my dad would blast email to everyone, like updates, new video, new stats, whatever. And then we got tons and tons of replies just because we sent it out to everybody. And, so that's how I got noticed by Ryder. I'd never even heard of it until they were calling me.
It's very interesting. What factors influenced your decision to play baseball at Ryder University over other potential offers?
Coach Barry Davis, he's still there. I really, really liked him. I felt he was, like, very upfront, very honest. And he told me on my visit, he said, "Listen, I got scholarship for you. I like you. I think you'll do well here. And I'm not saying you're gonna get anything, but I'm gonna give you the opportunity to win a starting spot." And that's all I wanted. I had no ambitions of playing professional baseball when I was in high school still. So I just wanted to go play 4 years of baseball in college and be done. You know, some other schools were like, "Well, maybe you'll pitch more your sophomore, junior year, senior year," and I was like, "No, I want to pitch right away, and I want to start." And I wasn't getting that, but I was getting the opportunity to earn that, and that's what I wanted, and that's ultimately why I decided on Ryder.
Now transitioning to your professional career, can you describe the emotions you felt when you heard your name called during the MLB draft, and what was going through your mind at that moment?
It was very stressful. The draft is a stressful process for one who goes through it, and I was really surprised because, like, my agent or advisor at the time had told us, you're not, like, that's not one of the teams that's, like, really hot on you. And so, like, that was one, there's only a few that he mentioned that probably were unlikely, and that was one of them took me. So it was really stressful. I could have, like, around about two rounds earlier to probably later, and it would have been, like, kind of where everyone had said I was going to get drafted. But when you're going through it and you see picks coming off the board and they're not you and nothing's happening on your, it's stressful.
That's actually very interesting. Well, do you by any chance could share what teams were high on you during the draft?
Yeah. I went to the Mets, actually, in the sixth round, I think. The Dodgers were on me. I actually did a pre-draft workout in Dodger Stadium. The Rays, we thought, were pretty interested. The Tigers were pretty interested. But it really, really, like, when it came down to the draft day, oh, the Royals. It was like we heard a lot from the Royals, the Dodgers, the Mets, like, on that day.
It's really cool. As you progress through the minor leagues, what do you attribute rapid success early in your career to, and were there any specific strategies or approaches that contributed to your development?
That was something that I had in college, and that's something that is pretty valuable in professional baseball. They knew what they were getting from me every day, and I just continued to have successful outings in weeks and months, and ultimately that first year was really, really good for me, and that's kind of how I flew up the system. I was just consistent, and it's really just the consistency of my work that led to consistent outcomes. So, like, my consistent routines of throwing and bullpens and workouts and conditioning and all that led to a really good season, and I think they saw a direct cause and effect of why I was having some success, and that's ultimately why I was able to move up pretty quickly.
Reflecting on your MLB debut, can you walk us through that moment that you received the news of your call-up, and how did it feel to step on that mound for the first time in a major league game?
So my thing, like, everyone pictures, like, you know, you get called up, you're sitting in the AAA office, and the manager calls you and says you're going to the big leagues. Well, that wasn't the case for me. I was in my first major league camp, 2019. I'll never forget it, obviously. The team has two exhibition games in Seattle, of all places. So the team has got, they're basically spring training games just in the home team city. So the team packs up and leaves, goes to Seattle, and they tell a few of us that we're still in camp. They haven't made their decision on the final starter yet, and they'll let us know when they decide. So we're just sitting there playing practice, waiting to hear something, and there's no news for like 4 days. And we're just, you know, and one of us is going to pitch a game, like, in the big leagues for our debut next week. So it's opening day, and they still hadn't told us, and we're like, we got to find out today. I mean, it's opening day. And so they called, they went to the office, and they, 4 or 5 people in there, and they get the GM, AJ Preller, on the phone, and he tells me that, so I knew who the announcer for the Padres was, which at the time I did not, and he said he's going to have to, just because I'm going to be pitching for the Padres on Saturday night. And I'm really shocked. But it didn't feel like a tradition that I had been pitching with this team in spring training. It kind of felt like I just didn't get sent down. I just stayed. It was really cool. But as far as my actual debut, it didn't out of the ordinary for me, honestly. Like, I just felt like I was where I was and, like, pretty calm out there and just out there doing my afterwards, it kind of hits you and sinks in. But actually, my set in St. Louis, because it was opening day in St. Louis, and they have amazing, like parade stuff. Incredible there. And that's where I really noticed, like, wow, this is really, really cool. Kind of a longer answer, but it was a cool story for me.
Yeah, it was a great story. What were your experiences like with AJ? There's a lot of stuff surrounding him.
I personally, he's always been very truthful with me, and I really like him. I think he's the idea for what he wants to do, and the way he looks at things is just, and I think that's why he gets so criticized in the media, especially because unconventional baseball logic, but it's his love, and I do think that there's something to that, any different going against the grain, because if everybody thought the same, then damage. So I do like him. I've talked to him since leaving the pod, and every time it's been pretty good.
Now, I've heard some stuff around this. What was the significance or inspiration that led you to choose jersey number 25?
25. Jim told me wore 25 when I was a kid growing up. He pictures me always in his little t-shirt jersey from the time I was 3 years old. And I just want to... when I was growing up, so 25 was available when I got called up, and that's the one I
Describe the transition of joining the Seattle Mariners in 2020. What were the adjustments like, both on and off the field, moving to a new city and a new team?
2020 was COVID, so the COVID year was really strange. That was really more weird than anything else, because they had all these rules and like guidelines in place, and like you could do this, you couldn't do this. So it kind of was like, and it was only 60 games, so it was hard to like know what you were supposed to be doing and what you. But Seattle was good for me that year because they really helped show me what I was really good at and what I should do more of, and that's ultimately what led me to have a pretty good year that year. And so they really helped me with my development from that aspect.
Yeah, as you said, coming off a career year in 2020, but only five starts into 2021, you were diagnosed with thoracic outlet syndrome. Can you explain a little bit about the injury and what the rehab process was like for you?
Yeah, so it's basically a nerve issue, and what happened when I got entrapped or gets entrapped when I lift my arm up overhead, and so I was getting... like nerve shocks in my hand to the point where when I was throwing, I couldn't feel my hand. It was pretty scary, honestly. But what they do is they go in and they took out my first rib. They took out my scalenes and my pec minor. So they really cut out a lot of your, to free up the nerve. And it's a tough recovery process, and it was for me. And even it was like, I mean, I was healthy, but I was not the same, because you pretty much have to relearn how to throw, because some pieces now, and now, you know, you can feel the ball again, and you're like, well, what about this and that? So unfortunate, but I'm very grateful to after that, because there's a lot of fear that when you have that, that's going to be it for you.
Yeah, that's a scary, scary injury. Throughout most of your time with the Mariners and Padres, you bounced around between the major and minor leagues. How did you prepare in order to stay order for opportunities to arise?
You're just trying to do the best you can wherever you're at. You gotta at some point you realize that circumstances are not up to you, unless really ever. So in the game, there's gonna be, you could be pitching really good, and they could trade for somebody. Guy's got no options, and someone's got to get option, and you get sent down even though options. And it's got nothing to do with how you're pitching. And stuff like that happens all the time in baseball. So I think once you see that side of the game, it starts to make more sense. And it's not easy, but at least you can understand it. And I think that's how you kind of got to go about it throughout your career.
Yeah, now shifting gears to your current chapter, what aspects of playing in Taiwan have stood out to you since joining the TSG Hawks?
Well, I wanted to come to Asia this year, because like you're saying, we're talking about opportunities, and coming off the injury, I kind of had been bullpen mostly, where I'd get a couple start here or there, and throwing multiple innings out of the bullpen and kind of bouncing around. Wanted a true opportunity to prove that I can start again, and so that's really why explore this opportunity. But the difference is, well, I'm just so much different. They're really, really, really good at just hitting the ball. Like, they make contact really well. They're not playing the power game like in the United States. Boom, bust, homer, strikeout, walk situation. It's really put the ball in play, make the defense make plays, put the ball in play, get on base, put pressure on. It's an older school style of business. Way more strategy in the game. That's what I've noticed so far.
It's a lot of information. There's a lot of differences between Taiwan and the United States. And that was actually my next question. Between the MLB and CPBL, what were the differences that you observed, and how have these differences impacted your approach to the game?
Like I'm saying, like how they hit the ball, it's caused me to make hitters differently and game plan for them in different ways, knowing that, hey, just because I get the two strikes here doesn't mean that that slider in the dirt is going to be a swing and miss it, or it's just not going to do anything. Like, that guy might actually get a hit on it because he's just going to like wait back, and he's gonna make contact, so that's something for sure. And then the bunting, like there's a lot of sacrifice bunt situations that they will put on, so being ready for those, and different base running things like hit and runs and slashing, stuff you don't see in professional baseball, or definitely not in the big leagues anymore, but you see more in like college, really, and maybe in high school, but you just don't baseball anymore. So adjusting back to that is different.
Yeah, there's a lot of differences between, as you just said, the MLB and CPBL. Who are some of your favorite teammates that you have ever played with thus far in your career?
Oh man, favorite teammates. Well, I'll start with some of my close friends. From the Mariners, Jared Kelnick, really close with him. He was a great teammate. Drew Steckenrider, he was a great teammate. Justice Sheffield, Brian O'Keefe. I'm with the Padres, Tom Cosgrove, Craig Stammen, he was awesome. There's way more than that people I'm closer with, but the thing I'll say about it is that the people that you play with, and like on the field and off the field, more importantly, are like those are the memories that I have and that make me think about these guys so fondly. They are like, it's an incredible relationship you form with your teammates in professional baseball, and really even, but it just gets like escalated as you go up the chain. It's really a unique thing that I'm in.
My next question is, is there one particular coach that you believe had the biggest effect on your career?
I would say my high hitting coach in Lake Elsinore with the Padres. He had a pretty big effect on me. Just he didn't like change anything for me. It's just the way he helped me think about myself as a pitcher. Really helped me. And anytime anyone asks that question, I always think back to him, because he didn't, like, any of the analytics stuff or any of the pitch, he knew all that stuff, but he never even told me any of it. Like, I didn't know anything at that time, because we weren't talking about pitching stuff, and he really helped me a lot. He's still with the Padres, I think, in AAA now, but I would say he was probably the most helpful to me in my career.
My next question is, has there ever been a hitter that has scared you when they stepped in the box? If so, who?
Scared me? No. One guy who I don't want to see in the box is Charlie Black. I'm hitting like 800 off me lifetime. He's got like two homers, three doubles. He just, everything I throw, he hits. I think I struck him out. Him, and then after that he hits everything. So that's a guy, his walkout comes on and I'm like, oh no, not this guy.
That's actually a surprising answer. I thought you were gonna go with Mike Trout there, after playing in the same division as him for over 3 years. About, I thought you were gonna go with Mike Trout. But is there a what does a usual off season look like for you?
Pretty much just training. Pretty much just training. I train probably about five days a week. And then probably, but I just train pretty much indoors at home. I try to like not do. So I try to just like work out more, get my body in shape and stuff like that. That's pretty much all I do in the off season. I don't really do anything on it. I watch a lot of football. Pretty much just like normal stuff, honestly.
Baseball players are usually known to be superstitious. Do you fall in that category? And if so, what are your superstitions?
I was really superstitious, especially in high school. In high school, I was really, really superstitious. Like, I had to have like the same stuff on and start everything at the same time and chew the same gum and like do all this crazy stuff, like, to be superstitious. But as I've gotten older, I've gotten way less superstitious and way more like routine based. Like, I realize that those superstitions aren't really superstitions. They're just routines that help me feel like I'm gonna be ready to perform at my best. So I've gotten away from the superstitions and more into just defining them as routines. And that's been more helpful, because a routine you can adjust, and a superstition, if something is not right, then is that going to throw off your whole day? No, of course not. So, like, I'm not going to let a little thing like that get in my way. So I changed the way I think about it. But yeah, I am still superstitious or routine based. I'll call it, yeah.
My final question for you is, if you give one piece of advice to somebody like me who wants to play baseball in college or at the MLB level, what would that be?
I would say figure out, like, you got to do a little self-reflection or listen to your coaches and find out what you are good at, like whatever makes you, whatever you're best at. And you got to go all in on that thing. Like, make that your defining trait and be the best you can be at that. So whether that's, if you're a power hitter, like, go be a power hitter, be the best power hitter in the country, and that's your defining trait. That's how you stand out to people. Great. If you're a velocity pitcher, if you throw really hard, throw really hard. Just throw hard. Stand out, because you have to stand out. And once you stand out, you get more opportunities. And then obviously you're going to work on the rest of your game, but just keep that thing that defines you, like that makes you stand out. Don't ever lose sight of that, whatever that is. For me, it was my consistency. Like, I had never been a great athlete. I had never been, great pitch stuff. I mean, I threw like 83 miles an hour at the highest in high school, and I went Division I, you know, like that would never happen today. But just being consistent and being myself, like, and just sticking to that, like, that's what got me to where I am today. And that's what it is for me. And also, like, being a strike thrower. So, like, I throw strikes. So I've always thrown strikes. And I kind of doubled down on that side of it. But whatever you're good at, be really good at it so much to stand out that it's undeniable.
Thanks so much again, Nick, for coming on, and good luck this year.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. I appreciate it.